The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. Good afternoon. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today and taking your calls at 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149 as we're heading into the weekend, taking a look at some of the entertainment options, entertainment stories. But there are some inspirational stories that are coming our way as well, and we're going to talk about one right off the bat here in this hour. We're going to talk, if you've seen the 2017 film, The Zookeeper's Wife, you probably already know a little bit about the story of Jan and Antonina Zabinski. They were the owners of the Warsaw Zoo back in the late 1930s. They became famous around the world for the care they gave their animals and for the techniques they advanced, but of course, the war intervened, and the bombing of Warsaw destroyed some of the animals there, and disrupted the city life. And of course, the Nazis came in and occupied all of Poland and imposed just horrific conditions, including some of the worst of the so-called Final Solution, the genocide against the Jews of Europe, took place in Poland. And the Zabinskis found a way to fight back against this. And again, if you've seen The Zookeeper's Wife, you kind of already know this story. But now there's a new documentary film called Of Animals and Men it's going to have a one-day showing on June 22nd at theaters around the country. And this is going to tell the story of how the Zabinskis were able to save the lives of hundreds of Jews in Poland through the very clever courageous use of the zoo. Joining us right now is Dominik Zawadzki. He's the grandson of Jan and Antonina Zabinski, and he's the director of the Zabinski Foundation, which is set up to protect and project the Zabinski's heroism. And Dominik, welcome to the show. It's an honor to speak to you today, sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
I don't think we're ever going to know all of the stories of heroism during the Holocaust. I think that there's a number of these stories that haven't been told, that may never end up being told just because of the circumstances of the war and its aftermath. But I think that these stories are incredibly important. They're incredibly important in it as a way of making sure that we understand that heroism takes a number of forms, but the first and primary form is the decision to actually do something to help, and that is what your grandparents did, Jan and Antonina Zabinski.
This is correct. Well, they had the means to help some people in out of the ghettos in Warsaw, and of course they took the action and did so. The whole thing was about taking people out, smuggle people out of the Warsaw Ghetto, give them sanctuary, give them a place to hide for just a few days so they can move on and escape to different cities, different areas. So yes, this was the action that they did, actually, yes.
And Dominik, your grandmother Antonina was a practicing Catholic, and she was a woman of great faith. Can you tell us a little bit about how that informed some of the things that she was doing in terms of trying to help out the Jews of Warsaw?
Well, she always had a medallion which she kept very, very close to herself. It was a Catholic medallion, and she never left the villa or left home without it. And she believes it will keep her safe and the people around her safe by the medallion. Yes, she had a great faith in it.
So, I mean, obviously her faith was a very important part of this. We're talking with Dominik Zawadzki and taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. How did this begin? What was the catalyst for the decision by Jan and Antonina that they were going to be actively working against the Nazis in Warsaw?
Well, they were a member of the underground resistance, actually. So they had the means, they had an idea that they could keep some people in the villa, in the basement. It started with their own friends, actually, and then it spread through the word spread through the underground resistance, and more and more people heard about it. More people had the opportunity to meet my grandfather and make him let him smuggle them out of the ghetto. So it began with friends, acquaintances, and spread to all kinds of people: Jews, handicapped people, mentally ill people, all the people that were put in the ghettos to be transported out to concentration camps
and marked for extermination. And I mean, I think that people might still not quite get how dangerous even that was, the personal connections and talking with friends, because that was an incredibly dangerous thing to do. There were a lot of people who were, the Gestapo was infiltrating some of these networks. There was a great risk in that sort of word of mouth.
Yes, the risk actually was, if anybody got caught, if my grandmother or my grandfather got caught, they will be, of course, terminated or killed, and the whole family would be, killed.
Right,
as a consequence.
As a consequence, absolutely. So tell us a little bit, again, we're talking with Dominic Zawadzki, and the film that we're discussing is Of Animals and Men. It's going to have, through Fathom Events, it's going to have a one-day-only showing in theaters around the country. We're going to talk a little bit more about how you can get the tickets for that. But tell us a little bit how they used the zoo in order to save these men and women.
Yes, well, the zoo, when they started the operation, the zoo was practically empty. So the cages, the animal cages, they were empty. They had an idea to keep the zoo going, to turn it into a pig farm, which they could use to feed people and disguise it in a kind of way. And Germans used to take the pigs out they took the meat out, of course, so they could eat it. But they had no idea that there were people hidden different places. So it was like it's. Where the light is hardest or sharpest, nobody can see what's really hidden in the back. So it was that idea. So,
and when the Nazis came in, they actually took the animals. At least they took some of the animals. Why did they take the animals?
Well, there were some endangered species. Some of the animals, my grandfather, Jan Szczepinski, had a close cooperation with the Berlin Zoo before the war, and also some German zoologists, which helped to move the animals and secure them from being bombed or killed by bombs.
And so, I mean, this is sort of a almost a propitious opening here to use those facilities to hide people. And I believe it's over 300 that were able to be hidden away, eventually transported out of danger, and had their lives saved by this process.
Yes, there is no official count of people. People say it's about 300, but unofficially, I heard larger numbers, yes.
Right. Yeah, I understand that as part of the story here, in getting people out of the ghetto, trying to get them out of there so that they could be rescued, that there's some connection about bugs that helped with this, and I'm curious about this, because I've only been told, ask him about the bugs, ask Dominic about the bugs. So you're gonna have to tell us about the bugs, Dominic.
No worries. One of the ways that my grandfather got access to the ghetto was because at the ghetto there was a very, very known international entomologist called Tendenbaum. And he got access to Tendenbaum because my grandfather also was an entomologist as a consultant. So he got access to the ghetto to consult with Tendenbaum family for the bugs. And the Tendenbaum had actually 500 cases of different beagles and bugs, and this is why my grandfather got really access to the ghetto, so he can study the bugs and gather information. But of course, the access to the ghetto was used differently.
So, I mean, it's a great story, right? And it's, that bugs were sort of the entree to get out of the ghetto, and that your grandfather was creative enough to make that work. Again, we're talking with Dominik Zawadzki. We're talking about the film Of Animals and Men. It's going to be airing in theaters around you on Tuesday, June 22nd. Eventually they've got hundreds of people here at the Warsaw Zoo. And of course, there's great danger in this. There's also not a lot of food. I mean, this is a war zone. And so it's very difficult to feed people, in a war zone. How was that able to be done in this zoo?
Well, I was told it was really, really hard, actually.
Yes.
And they lived off different things, of peels, vegetable peels, leftovers. Also, the pigs, of course, were used, slaughtered. So, yes, it was a question of creativity. What did you could find and how you could help? There is no official way which they said that they did this and they stole or different things. But yes, they had to manage in some kind of way.
They clearly managed. Now, again, this is a very dangerous operation. They were in the middle of extremely dangerous situation. Did they ever get found out, or did it ever come close to getting found out about what the operation was there?
Well, there is some different stories about it, but no. There was one time which my grandmother thought it was over. It was at the end when the Nazis were surrendering, but still, while they were surrendering, they were destroying the city and destroying everything around them. They came into the zoo and they lined everybody up against the wall of the villa. And my grandmother, she wrote in her diary that she thought it was over. And there was one soldier. He actually took my uncle, Richard, her oldest son, and took him around the corner of the villa. Then she heard a shot and thought, yes, well, that was over. And her knees were weak and she started crying. And a minute later, Richard, he came out with the chicken, which the soldier had shot. And the soldier came out also laughing. And they let everybody go in again. So almost, but not.
Wow.
It was a very, very stressful situation, I could imagine, and a very, very tragic feeling for a mother to think it's almost shot, yes.
Indeed. And again, we're speaking with Dominik Zawadzki about his film Of Animals and Men. A lot of people know stories. I talked about this a little bit just a few minutes ago. A lot of people know some more famous stories, like, for instance, Raoul Wallenberg, although we still don't know what ever happened with Raoul Wallenberg, or Corrie ten Boom. Why do you think that your grandparents' story hadn't received as much attention, even after the 2017 film? It's still not a story that too many people know about.
Well, that's quite a difficult question. I can actually say, well, there are a lot of stories from the war. This is just one of them, and there is a lot of stories we don't hear about. I feel very, very honored to have this in my family to tell. And I would say it has been told around the world. And I think maybe this movie will tell it even more. There was a book released called The Zookeeper's Life, written by Diane Ankerman. It was a bestseller in the U.S. Upon this book, there was a movie made, also with the name of Zookeeper's Wife. And now we have Of Animals and Men, which actually is a kind of documentary. It is a documentary, but there are some things in the movie which can, yeah, well, it didn't bend the story, but it shows it from a different perspective.
Sure, right. I mean, in terms of just doing some reenactments, I mean, that's kind of very well known. It's a very well-known storytelling technique in the documentary genre. So, but yes. There's a lot of interviews with the survivors. There's archive footage, and the film's narrator is I believe your aunt, right, Antonina Zabinska, the daughter of your grandparents.
The narrator of the movie is actually Antonina Zabinska, my grandmother.
Oh, it is your grandmother. Okay, I'm sorry.
It is her written words from the diary, which are narrated. My mother is also in the movie. Unfortunately, she has passed away a few months ago, so she couldn't.
Oh, I'm interview. Sorry.
And, yeah, well, and so yeah, there's the family aspect. It will be absolutely still kept. It's narrated. Well, it's shown how my grandmother wrote the diary, and it goes through the diary, and the documentary is based on the diary.
What drove you to do the documentary? I mean, obviously, you want to tell the story of your grandparents. This is a great story to tell. Is there anything other?
I have to stop you. It's not my documentary.
I'm sorry. Okay, so I'm sorry. I apologize for getting that wrong. But I mean, why the documentary? You've got the zookeeper's wife. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, I think the why answers itself. But I mean, how do you feel about this documentary? And do you think it's going to be a little bit clearer and tell the story a little bit more precisely than the way the story's been told?
Well, the documentary is really, really well taken. People are taken really, really well in. It's really, really beautifully told by the footage and then the footage, which has never been seen before.
Right.
And the footage made like it's old footage. Actually, fun thing of it all, the story is very, very known outside of Poland. Inside of Poland, it's not that known. So the documentary actually was made a couple of years ago in Polish for the Polish audience to tell the Poles the story also and show it from a different perspective than Zookeeper's Wife.
You know, and I think, and I can understand why that would be, because I think that, you know, this is a very painful episode in Poland's history. And I think that that's probably more difficult to come to grips with some of this. And that's the reason why this is important to tell this story. And that's the reason why, it's a good reason why that you are the director of the Zabinski Foundation, which is to project the legacy and the lessons of these,
yes,
of your grandparents' deeds and tell the story of, again, it's an awful period in Polish history, but these are two Polish heroes who really stood up and did something. And that's an important lesson for everybody to hear about.
Especially in the world we live in right now. We feel maybe very much safe, but if we look back, the World War is not that far away from us. We never know what the new generation would happen, what will happen with the new generation of people. That's why I think it's very, very important to project the actions, the communitarian aspect in it, the love, the lack of judgment. And I think it's very important to educate and in this direction.
Absolutely. By the way, you can find out more at ZabinskiFoundation.org. ZabinskiFoundation.org. They have a website up there. It's in English, and you can you can read the history. You can talk about it. Talks about the mission activities. There's There are clips of videos here of interview with Teresa Zabinski in the Zabinski's villa at the Warsaw Zoo. There's all sorts of great stuff there at the website, so I'd encourage it. Now, the movie's coming out on Tuesday, January 22nd, in theaters in the United States. You can go to fathomevents.com, and at the relevantradio.com website, I'm sure there's going to be a link there. After June 22nd, I'm assuming, of course, that this is going to be available through other methods.
Yes, absolutely. It will also be released on DVD, and there are some different distributions already in action. So, absolutely. But I think that the event is huge event, and I'm really, really proud it's happening. And I really, really hope everybody will watch the movie and see for themselves how people helped other people. Yes.
And I think, and again, we're talking with Dominik Zawadzki, who's the grandparents of Jan and Antonina Zabinski, the subjects of the documentary of Animals and Men. I think that there is an important, there's a value in having a communal experience in watching this film. There's a value in having this in theaters, I would say, Dominik. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I remember when the first showing of the movie here in Poland was in a cinema, and then after the movie, when the credits rolled, nobody got up. People were crying; they had tears in their eyes. It was extreme feeling. Everybody felt really close to each other. I really hope the same will happen in the U.S.
I hope it does as well. And you have the opportunity right now. You go to fathomevents.com/events/of-animals-and-men. It's, you know, when you have to do website addresses on air, it always sounds a little bit bad. But go to ZabinskiFoundation.org or just go to fathomevents.com to find out the times and theaters where this might be happening close to you. And Dominik Zawadzki, I'll leave you 30 seconds to wrap up your feelings about this.
Well, said before, society which we live in now, we can't change the past, but we can do a better job to form the future. And this movie shows how people managed to do so and help them, to help other people, showed how humanitarian actions result. So, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Dominik Zawadzki, thank you very much. Thank you for telling your grandparents' story so passionately. ZabinskiFoundation.org. You can find out more there. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. We'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
What does sueñito mean?
Sueñito? It means little dream.
That's it? No story?
All right, everybody sit down.
Yes! It's a story of a block that was disappearing in a barrio called Washington Heights. The streets were made of music.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew and taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. That was a trailer from a movie called In the Heights. We're going to be talking about your entertainment choices and entertainment industry issues in this final half hour with my good friend Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com. HollywoodandToto.com is the place that Christian started off when he decided that he was a little tired of the leftward lurch in Hollywood, and he wanted to start his own website featuring entertainment news from his conservative perspective. And Christian, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
And of course, you can find Christian on Twitter at Hollywood and Toto as well. That's and HollywoodandToto.com is the website. We're going to get to In the Heights because that's a new film that's coming out. I want to just talk to you a little bit about a couple of other things. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the previous half hour, but this documentary of Animals and Men, which has been recently re-narrated in English and is going to be released here in the theaters on June 22nd. That's an interesting event. Fathom Events has been doing these sort of like singular events, singular communal events. And I've seen them do these things in theaters. It's like a network now where they're trying to expand the traditional use of the theater, which has just usually been to just show the latest movies, trying to do cultural events in there. Now, this is a movie, but it's sort of a one of their series of cultural events that Fathom Events have been doing. I think that this is a very interesting use of the nation's cinemas, and I think it points to the idea that they're going to have to differentiate themselves even further in the future.
Yeah, kudos to Fathom Events. They've been doing things like this for a while now, and you're right.
Yes, they have.
I think they're ahead of the curve in this way. I think they're kind of ahead of where the culture is going. And they do a lot of different things. I believe they have a lot of arts showcases, like maybe the Met or sort of theatrical or opera performances that you might not be able to get to if you don't live in a community where those arts resources are right there at your doorstep. So I think it's great, and they've been very faith-friendly over the years, too. That part of their repertoire has been faith-leaning films and things like that. So good for them, and I also think they're tapping into something, because the fact that they keep doing it means they are successful. They're kind of onto something, and if more people come out and see it, more people talk about it, there you go.
Well, in this case, it's interesting, too. First off, we just got done talking with Dominic Zawadzki about this from the Zabinski Foundation, ZabinskiFoundation.org, and it was his grandparents. This is a movie about his grandparents and how they rescued over 300 Jews from the Nazis in the middle of Warsaw, which is an amazing story in and of itself. And you probably remember this. The story was told in a film. It was actually 4 years ago, 2017, called The Zookeeper's Wife, which is based on a best-selling book that also talked about this. But I think it's interesting that they're putting this together just as theaters are really starting to reopen fully at the end of this pandemic. And that, to me, it tells me that this is something that there's at least a commitment here to keep those cinemas open, not just for these cultural events, but also for movies that are going to be coming out soon as well.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because this is not the typical fare that you see. I think blockbusters can be a dime a dozen. I love blockbusters. I love movies that are fun. But I think that there's I don't want to say eclectic, but sort of a unusual by Hollywood standards kind of programming. And I think, again, it's sort of seeing a niche that's not being served properly and thinking, hey, we can maybe do it better. So I think that's part of what they're up to.
And what's interesting about that is that there's all sorts of different delivery systems. And we've been talking about this ever since the pandemic struck, that home theater systems have improved to the point now where you really have a competitive environment for enjoying this type of fare. Between cinemas and home theaters. And it used to be you had to be really high-end, you had to be really committed, you had to buy the latest and greatest and most expensive equipment to have that sort of competitive environment for watching films. That's no longer the case. It's very much accessible. That type of experience in the home is very much accessible. And yet you don't see a lot of those types of cultural events coming across on the streaming services. You don't have the Met on Netflix, live on Netflix, for instance, which Fathom Events does. You don't have sort of this this event sort of feeling to these re-releases of really classic films that have been restored. That sort of thing could be done, but it's not being done. There's a real Fathom Events is really sort of filling a gap here that it's puzzling that you don't see more people trying to do that.
Yeah, lately I'm saying that show business is an asterisk after the business part of it. Because a lot of missed opportunities here. I like the word you used, event, because I think that's part of the fun. If you do make an event something special, and I think that's the whole Fathom Events appeal, is this isn't going to be playing for the next 3 weeks, and if you miss it today, you get it tomorrow. It's usually 1-2 days. It's a very limited run. And that makes it special. It kind of plays into psychology. I remember years ago, I wanted to see the Blair Witch Project because everyone was talking about it. I think it was 1999. Went to the theater and they were sold out. And by golly, I had to see that movie. So I had, I rushed back and saw it again when there was actually a seat for me. So I you know, psychology is part of the marketing experience. And if they can make this an event and make it special and make it something that you can't see elsewhere, good on them.
This is something that it comes up with people of my age. I'll say it that way. that there used to be a sort of event type of feel to movie premieres, even if it wasn't, you know, even if you didn't have the stars showing up. But the theaters were built for it, right? They were built in the tradition of the actual theater, right? The cinemas were sort of a reflection of the, you know, the stage theaters. And some of these higher end movies would come out that you'd have the booklets that would sort of be like the playbill for the movie. I mean, I was very young at the time, but I kind of remember this with one of the first Charlie Brown movies, and I'm trying to remember which one it was. But actually, I remember getting the booklet and all that, and you kind of dressed up for it. And it certainly that went away by the time I was a teenager. It was pretty much gone. And the cinemas aren't built for that anymore. And I'm wondering if Fathom Events isn't really tapping into something that's really been missing for people, and sort of trying to bring that back, and whether or not the theaters themselves, the cinemas themselves, are going to catch up to that and orient their physical space to try to promote the event sort of feeling around those things.
Well, I think they'd be wise to follow that lead. I think there are certain things you can do right away that make it more fun, more interesting. And some of them are in place right now. There's a theater in Denver. They don't do it anymore, but they used to introduce the film where an usher would come up and say, "Hi, you're about to see blah, blah, blah. Did you know that in 19 such and such?" They gave little nuggets and facts and little details about the movie that you didn't know, that you didn't expect, that were kind of fun. And also the Alamo Films, and I'm assuming that the Draft House is coming back as the pandemic wanes, they show a lot of quirky shorts in front of a movie. I saw one of the Jumanji films, the recent movies with Jack Black, and they showed a clip of Jack Black on a Japanese game show. Now, I probably could find that on my own on YouTube, potentially, but the fact that I settled into my seat and they had that showing and then the movie, it made it kind of unique. And you talk about sort of maybe the structure of the films. That didn't take anything, just a little imagination. And I think that if we see theaters struggling, you know, for the next few months, maybe in a few years, I do think they're going to have to get more innovative and do things like that, if not exactly what I'm talking about, other stuff. Like you said, make it fun, make it an event, make it imaginative, something you just can't replicate perfectly at home because your TV at home is getting pretty big and the sound system is sounding pretty good. So, you know, the sort of the chasm between the two is really shrinking.
And if somebody's texting while the movie's going on, you can tell them to go into another room because they're probably your family member, and you can tell family members to do stuff like that, not total strangers. We're speaking with Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com, taking your calls at 888-914-9149. Christian, I want to cut to another story. This is one you're covering over at HollywoodandToto.com, which is the pushback against cancel culture. We have some Hollywood stars that are really speaking out against this. You know, Chris Rock has talked about it. Dave Chappelle has talked about it. Ricky Gervais has talked about it. In fact, he talked about it at an award show, and now nobody wants him to MC award shows any longer. John Lovitz is the latest person to speak out against cancel culture and the he's calling it a form of McCarthyism, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly echoes, comparisons, whatever one of phrase you want to use from then to now. It's certainly not an exact match, but it's people having the wrong thoughts, wrong in quotation marks, and suffering as a result. And, you know, he's old enough to know the older system. He's old enough to know that he, you know, became a star with Saturday Night Live, which is a show that once kind of dared to be different and shook things up and no longer really does that. And he understands that as an artist, we need to kind of go in tough places. And, you know, sometimes a comedian will tell a joke and it's going to fail. It's going to fall on its face and it might not be funny and it might be a little rude. But sometimes you have to tell that joke to get to the next joke. It's the way comedians work. It's you know, they consider the stage like their workshop. Now, if you go to see Jim Gaffigan, it's going to be always clean. And that's just his, that's his MO, and that's perfectly fine. You're going to see Dave Chappelle. He's going to push some boundaries. He's going to make you squirm in your seat. And I think the audiences should know, they bought that ticket. You know, it's Gaffigan versus Chappelle. You should know what to expect. If you don't want to be sort of uncomfortable, then Jim Gaffigan is just as funny. It's just a different style. So I think when you take away some of those tools, the comedians have less to say, have less to share. They can't go to places maybe they wanted to go. And it really does diminish the art to a certain degree.
Well, and we're seeing this in other contexts, right? I mean, so it's not just comedy. It's not just movies. It's also books. You're seeing stories where publishers are pressuring authors, or authors are being pressured to revise lines in their books because some people find them offensive. And this is it's not just one or two. This is actually sort of an industry thing right now. It's one of the things that is going around here. There's a real sense of what we used to call Baudelaireization. Which is to revise material that has already been, you know, printed, published, discussed, cater to the current thought of it. This is Baudelaireization, goes way before political correctness, but what would have been called political correctness? Well, you know, the consensus thought of the moment, the consensus taste of the moment. And we used to warn against that, Christian. I mean, now it's sort of becoming, yeah, it's sort of becoming a go-to process. And so I think Lovitz has got quite a bit of room to talk here.
Yeah, I literally wrote a book on this subject. It'll come out in January about cancel culture and the woke mob. It's worth noting that people like Stephen Colbert, allegedly a comedian, was yucking it up over Dr. Seuss books being pulled because of allegedly racially insensitive material. You know, you can go back and forth to whether it was, whether it wasn't, but, you know, what he's not realizing is that these things don't just start and stop, that they keep going, and that it today it's Dr. Seuss, tomorrow it's that. And what's, to me, the most fascinating and the scariest part of it all is that, so today we decide X is off limits. You just can't do it. What's tomorrow? And what are we saying and writing and talking about and joking about today that will suddenly be verboten in a week, a month, a year? Because you know how quickly culture changes now. And that should be frightening to everybody.
And we're speaking with Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And I think that, you know, certainly, you know, tastes change, mores change, and that's certainly fine, right? And we're not talking about you should be forced to listen to something that you don't want to listen to. And we're not saying that that you shouldn't be allowed to criticize things that you think are worthy of criticism. I do think, though, that when you're forcing people to go back and excise material based on, ex post facto changes in taste, that you run the risk of losing the value of the written word, the filmed art that reflects a particular point in time and is important for cultural history and identities to some extent. And I think that this idea that you've got to go back and edit things over and over and over again, or simply delete them out, is dangerous. You run the risk of losing who you are.
Yeah, I mean, it would be better to watch an 80s movie with your child and say, you know, this is really not something we'd say today, or this is a little bit sort of archaic in modern times. Here's why it wasn't. I mean, that's kind of a nice conversation, or at least a healthy one. So I think that's important. And also, you know, we're not saying, you know, it's bad that Netflix will have a filter where you can't make sure that your kids can watch it without getting exposed to profane stuff. Like, that's good. That's kind of giving us more options. It's not erasing anything. You know, if we're an adult and we don't mind that material, we can watch it, but maybe we don't want our kids watching it. And often streaming platforms will be very helpful and say, okay, you can put this filter in place, your kids will be protected, they're not going to be able to get access to it. Those are great things. It's not, you know, wishing it away to the cornfield. It's still there. You can watch it, but, you know, better off your kid can't watch it at this point. He or she may be too young.
Very nice Twilight Zone reference, by the way, wishing away into the cornfield. I got that one. I just want to make sure that everybody knows I got that reference from Christian Toto of HollywoodInToto.com. Yes, and I think the difference is setting up tools to set up your own experience in watching the content that you want and denying other people the choice to do the same. That's really what the difference is, Christian.
Yeah, it seems very obvious to me, and sadly we're heading in a point where certain people want certain things taken away, and we don't get a say.
And that's, well, I think certain people want...
That
want
ain't to, good.
I think certain people want to control the choices of other people, and that's the
yes.
that's the problem, and to the extent that they want to eliminate choices altogether. Well, we've got lots of choices to discuss with Christian Toto of HollywoodInToto.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of movies that may or may not be your choice this weekend and talk about some of those entertainment options. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew. We'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 49 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew and taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Hey, don't forget that coming up after this is the Cale Clark Show, and the topic today is how to keep your kids Catholic and avoiding burnout. So two good topics, and make sure you stick around 5 p.m. Central Time right here on Relevant Radio for the Cale Clark Show for that. Right now we're speaking with Christian Toto of HollywoodInToto.com, and we're about to talk about a couple of movie options that you might have for this weekend. One of which is In the Heights. Now, I've heard a lot about In the Heights, and I read your review. I haven't had a chance to see the movie, but I've read your review, and it sounds like it either needed a better editor or a better third act, but there's a lot to be hopeful about in the Heights.
Yeah. It's just way too long, and I don't know. Maybe the movie was dragged forward in a way that it was unnecessarily kind of lengthened, or it just gets weak at the end. But boy, the first two thirds is just an enormous amount of fun. It's a section of New York City. It's a Latino community that takes great pride in their culture and sort of being there for each other. And it's joyful, and it's just upbeat, and the music is kind of will kind of sweep you off your feet. It's all the good things, and it's got a wonderful young cast. And then it just kind of loses its steam by the two-thirds mark and never really recovers. But, you know, they don't make many movie musicals anymore. It's just not what they do. It's a part of the golden age of Hollywood. So when you get them, you hope that they're good. And this one is mostly very good. And I'll be kind of curious to see some of the young stars in the movie, where they go from here, because they seem to be pretty talented. And, again, you know, if you're going to go to a theater with a good sound system, there's kind of a communal experience in seeing something kind of like this. Not like horror, not like comedy, but, I don't know, a toe-tapping musical that's just full of life and buoyancy. That's not a bad way to spend a couple hours.
You know, again, you know, I think that sometimes when we're looking at these things, movies are very rarely perfect. I'm not sure I've ever really seen a perfect movie. And sometimes you go for the experience, and sometimes that's enough. You know, we talk about popcorn movies, for instance. You know, The Mummy with Brandon Fraser, right, and Rachel Weisz was a great popcorn movie. Far from a perfect movie, but it's a great popcorn movie. You go there, you just enjoy the ride, and some of it's silly, some of it's over the top, and some of it you're kind of rolling your eyes going, you know, okay, we've seen these mummies come to life, you know, now about 1,000 times in this. Can we move on to something else, sort of thing? But you know, again, you go because it's for the entire experience, and that's part of what you want to do with this. So don't go into the movies thinking you're going to find a perfect movie, you know, but go for the fun. Second movie that you've reviewed, and I think this review just went up today, is 12 Mighty Orphans, which I hadn't even heard about until I read your review. I'd heard about In the Heights. That's a very, very, high profile release. But 12 Mighty Orphans, you call it Jordan Peterson the movie, but you also find value in this movie as well.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty flawed too, but boy, the messaging is really wonderful. I think parents should take their kids to this movie. It's about, you know, these orphans. This is based loosely on a true story. They've taken a lot of liberties, but the core of the story is true. It's the Depression era, and there's an orphanage with some teenagers, and they hire a football coach to come in and say, hey, we're going to make you a football team to treat you, you know, what football can, you know, being on a sports team, discipline, and, you know, working with other people. And there are a lot of good elements there that can make you a better person. And the coach, played by Luke Wilson, tries to instill that and does quite well. And, you know, they don't have a football. They don't have helmets or shoulder pads. They don't even have a field, but they make it work. And they go into some pretty great success. And it's a very sweet film. I don't know if it's PG or PG-13, but it's certainly, I would think it's pretty much for the whole family. And it's, for all its flaws, it's got a big, big heart. And there's some good casting choices here. Martin Sheen is excellent. He plays a sort of an advisor to the coach who has a drinking problem and has to deal with that. And then the great Robert Duvall is here, and it's just a cameo. I wish to see more of him. He's such a screen legend. This one is opening, I believe, this weekend, but just in Texas, because it's a Texas-based story. Next weekend, it should go much wider. So if you're going to want a movie with good messages and something heartfelt and inspiring, absolutely, 12 Mighty Orphans is your pick. And again, based on true story, they did a lot of condensing. The story really did play out, but not quite like it is here, but that's Hollywood.
So it is PG-13. I guess I should also ask you about In the Heights. I mean, do you think that that's appropriate for all audiences? Is that something that's more in line for adults, or do you think families can go see that one as well?
You know, that may be PG-13 as well. I don't recall much that would be uncomfortable. There are certainly romances in there, but they're pretty chaste by modern movie standards. So, you know, I think some of the themes are a little more sophisticated for sure. And there may be a little bit of language that would kind of merit that rating. But, you know, maybe 10 and up, 12 and up, that kind of a thing. So, you know, it depends on, you know, each parent has to make their own decisions. But these are not movies that are going to shock you or rock you or make you feel totally uncomfortable. It's not their method.
And in fact, about 12 Mighty Orphans, you write that, you know, it's a formula movie, and the reason why you see formula movies is because formulas tend to work.
They do.
And not just in terms of, you mentioned rom-coms and inspirational stories. I mean, the biggest movie make, you know, the blockbusters these days are almost all comic book movies, and all the comic book movies are very formulaic, and it's because, again, that formula works. Very few of those break out of a fairly rigid formula. Formulas work. Why do you think formulas work so well?
Well, they're tried and true, for starters. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But also, I think they're comforting in a way. I mean,
yes.
It's not a spoiler to say when you go to a romantic comedy, you want the guy and the gal to fall in love and maybe walk down the aisle. Maybe the movie stops before that happens, but you kind of think you're heading in that direction all the same. And there have been some romantic movies where the couples don't end up together. And, that's certainly a creative choice. But I think generally speaking, you know, we want them to fall in love and be happy and find the spark and the love. And it's escapism. It can be wonderful. So, you know, we want Rocky to win. The first Rocky, he doesn't win, but his tie was sort of was a win in and of itself. And he really kind of, you know, found a beautiful woman, and he found, he kind of gave himself a second chance at life. So there are wins that aren't clear wins, but at the same time, that's what you want. It's okay. You just have to have a lot of cleverness maybe to kind of make the formula stand out, or just, you know, honesty, integrity. We want these stories to go a certain way, and if they're done properly, I think we're at no problem with it.
Now, we've got an off-air question, and I'll, yeah. We've just got a couple of minutes about this. I got to ask about this because this is the first I've heard of this. Did you know that there is going to be a new version of West Side Story coming out later this year?
Yes, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
And from all accounts, it will be more culturally sensitive. I don't know exactly what that means, but, you know, we're living in sensitive times, and you know, if people look back at a movie that's 30, 40, 50 years old, it may not align with current values, and we just talked about that a bit. But, you know, if someone's going to do that properly, I think Steven Spielberg's the right person. He's a genius at film. So we'll see what happens. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know the exact release date. It might have been one of many films that got bumped around the schedule, but I think it's later this year. But I think they teased it a bit on the Oscar telecast. But, great story, great musical, wonderful director. Let's see what happens. Let's see if they can kind of capture that magic again.
Well, if they teased it during the Oscar telecast, no wonder it's a great secret. I mean, nobody's watching the Oscar telecast these days.
It's on the Oscars.
I'm sorry. I just had to throw that in there because we've talked about the Oscar telecast. But, I mean, this is interesting. I'm not sure how you do a more culturally sensitive William Shakespeare because, of course, West Side Story is based on Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And it's in the original movie is so iconic. I don't know how you get around that. But we got about 20 seconds, Christian. I'll just give you the floor for one last thought about that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of remaking great movies. I almost think it's better to make mediocre to bad movies again, because maybe there was a flicker of a great idea that just got lost in the shuffle. But we live in a reboot age, a sequel age, a remake age, and that's what we want, and I'm sure people will line up to see it, which is telling Hollywood, give us more. And it's kind of our fault when it happens.
Absolutely. Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com, at Hollywood and Toto on Twitter. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew. Have a blessed weekend, folks.